This program is provided by a trusted partner of the church and is educational, inspirational, and uplifting. It does not necessarily represent the official position of the church.
Printed individually during Joseph Smith's lifetime, it was not until 1851 in Liverpool, England, that these significant documents were brought together. And then, a generation later, they became Latter-day Saint Scripture. Tonight, the story of the Pearl of Great Price.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Channel now presents the Joseph Smith Papers.
K-Jazz Television, in cooperation with the Church History Department of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, presents this weekly series highlighting the research of scholars and historians as they prepare for the publication of the Joseph Smith Papers. And now your host, Glenn Rawson.
Tonight is our final installment in our Revelations to Publication series. Our intent through this has been to tell that story of how each component of Scripture in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has evolved from that moment of first being put to paper to that time when it became one of the standard works of the Church. Tonight, we conclude with the fourth of those, the Pearl of Great Price.
Richard E. Turley, Jr.
The Pearl of Great Price is an interesting book of Revelation in that it was compiled, a kind of anthology, brought together not during Joseph Smith's lifetime, but afterward.
Brian M. Howe Guild.
And so it's an interesting little story as far as, you know, it just didn't burst onto the scene. It was a very, the Lord kind of does line upon line, precept upon precept, and just kind of gathered the whole momentum as it went along there.
The barrenness portrayed in this early view of the Salt Lake Valley partially explains how the Pearl of Great Price came to be printed in England.
You have in the 1840s, of course, the entire church headquarters moves from the Nauvoo area to the Rocky Mountain region in the Salt Lake Valley. So the headquarters change, and when they get there, there's really no paper. I mean, there's no trees. Well, Britain is noted for its publications. I mean, it's got publishing houses that go way back for years and years and years. And so in Liverpool, what the church would do is since they didn't have any paper really, what they would do is they would make sure that when missionaries were coming back or going out, whatever, they would commission them to have certain church materials printed over in Liverpool, and then the returning ones would, you know, bring them back with them. It's kind of ironic, but the saints in Britain, they're not getting this church literature, and they're there. They're not even getting this. Many are poor, and they can't afford it, perhaps, but the church isn't really. They're concerned about getting those materials over here and working with the members here. But as the population increases over there, and it gets to be more than half in the 50s, late 40s, early 50s, you have many members talking to Franklin D. Richards saying, please, can we have some of this literature? We would love to have this sacred material that Joseph produced.
In 1850, Elder Franklin D. Richards, one of the newest members of the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles, was called to be president of the British Mission.
Kent P. Jackson.
He himself was a bright and literate person with good skills for the use of language and for writing and things like that. Among his very first projects was a publication that he had thought of for some months before he started it called The Pearl of Great Price.
And so Franklin D. would write a letter to his one of his relatives, Levi Richards, and ask him, you know, what do you think? Do you think I ought to do something like that? And he writes back and says, well, yeah, you should. You should make this stuff available to the saints there.
Elder Richards decided to go ahead then and publish on the church press in England a special collection of revelatory texts from the prophet Joseph Smith.
And he chose the title from Jesus' parable of the Pearl of Great Price from Matthew chapter 13, in which a man who collected costly pearls found one that was so precious that he was willing to sacrifice everything for it.
He felt clearly from that title that the contents of the Pearl of Great Price were well worth reading, and they are.
And so he put together a collection of narrations and writings and translations of the prophet Joseph Smith that he believed would be of value for the members of the church in Great Britain. Most of the material that he used, Latter-day Saints in the United States were already familiar with, but he was aware of the fact that these were things that were not readily available for British and European Latter-day Saints, and so he decided to put them in this little collection of a Pearl of Great Price.
Those records that came to be in the Pearl of Great Price were originally prepared by Joseph Smith and published in church periodicals in Missouri, Illinois, and Ohio. But with the passage of time and with the growth of the church, those publications became increasingly scarce.
We don't know exactly why Elder Richards included what he included in his Pearl of Great Price, except that he wanted to make available for the saints things that had come from the prophet Joseph Smith that he believed were precious. So he included the following things. He included sections from what we now call the Book of Moses. The Book of Moses is the first few chapters of Genesis from Joseph Smith's new translation of the Bible. Parts of the Book of Moses had been published prior to 1851. And for those, Elder Richards, it's clear that Elder Richards took material that had previously been published in church newspapers, in the Times and Seasons and in the Evening and the Morning Star, both in Missouri in the 1830s and then from the Times and Seasons in Nauvoo in the 1840s.
The Book of Moses, as we know it now, was in 1851 titled and constructed differently.
But some of the material that he included under what we would now call the Book of Moses, that title, of course, came years later, some of that material had not yet been published to the church. And so we know that Elder Richards must have had some kind of handwritten copies of parts of Joseph Smith's Genesis translation so that he could use those. And we suspect he had some transcriptions that he had made of his own, copying from somebody else's copy. But even so, the Book of Moses material in the 1851 Pearl of Great Price was significantly different from how that material is today, both in terms of the text and also in terms of the content. In the 1851 Pearl of Great Price, Elder Richards published the sections that we now call the Book of Moses, or at least parts of the Book of Moses, under two headings. The first one was called An Extract from the Prophecy of Enoch, and this included material coming from chapter 6 and chapter 7 of Moses. The second section of Book of Moses material was called The Words of Moses, which is actually a quote from Moses chapter 1, verse 1. It was actually a longer heading than that. But under that, he included a big chunk of the Book of Moses going from what we now call Moses chapter 1, verse 1, through parts of Moses chapter 5, and then other parts of Moses chapter 7 and Moses chapter 8. And so he definitely had the major portion of what we now call the Book of Moses, but it was in a very different and almost random order compared to how we have it today.
And then there was the Book of Abraham, printed originally in Nauvoo in the Times and Seasons.
Elder Richards also included the Book of Abraham, virtually identical to the text of the Book of Abraham that we have today. He also included another excerpt from Joseph Smith's Bible translation, and that is the translation of Matthew chapter 24, which we now call Joseph Smith Matthew. That had previously been published in the church, so church members were somewhat familiar with it. In the early 1830s, it was printed on a broadside, a large pamphlet that was used in missionary efforts. So it had been previously published. In addition to that, Elder Richards decided to include the first part of the prophet Joseph Smith's history. And that's the narrative that we still have in the Pearl of Great Price today called Joseph Smith history, and it's the prophet's account of his birth and his childhood, his quest for truth, and the first vision, and the coming of Moroni up until about the time of the restoration of the Aaronic priesthood.
However, we know from our careful historical research that Joseph Smith's history was completed only to the first part of August in 1839, at the time he died in 1844. The rest of it was completed by scribes, mostly in Utah. And even that early portion, prepared before Joseph Smith's death, was not carefully reviewed by Joseph Smith, except the early portion. So what we have in the Pearl of Great Price represents a portion that we're confident Joseph Smith was able to review and publish during his lifetime.
That original Joseph Smith history, as found in the 1851, well, it's virtually identical to what we read today in the 1981 edition. Now, in addition to these texts, there were other things included in the 1851 that Elder Richards thought were important.
In addition, the 1851 Pearl of Great Price included five of the revelations in the Doctrine and Covenants, or more accurately, sections of five of the revelations in the Doctrine and Covenants. Elder Richards wanted to include some that he believed were highlights, for example, the prophecy on war that the prophet had given, which we now call Section 87 of the Doctrine and Covenants. But also he included sections on priesthood government and church organization. So it seems to me that he wanted church members there to see the canonical discussions of how the church is to be organized and run. Elder Richards also included in the 1851 edition a curious entry called Times and Seasons, Volume 3, page 709. And what this was the Joseph Smith had written an important document on the early history of the church at the request of Mr. John Wentworth in Chicago, Illinois. And at the end of that document, the prophet had added a series of unnumbered paragraphs that explained some of the basic teachings of the church. And our title, The Articles of Faith, wasn't added until some decades after that. And so when Elder Richards decided to include those articles of faith in his 1851 Pearl of Great Price, all he could do was give the reference where he got them from out of the Times and Seasons, because they didn't yet have a name.
Elder Richards also included a text that was not revealed to Joseph Smith.
Elder Richards also included in the 1851 Pearl of Great Price a poem that had been written recently by British convert John Jakes, and the poem is called Truth. The poem Truth stayed in the Pearl of Great Price for a few decades until it was added to our hymn book, and we still have that in the hymn book today, Oh Say What Is Truth. But apparently Elder Richards liked it a lot. Elder Richards wrote a preface for his little compilation, The Pearl of Great Price. And in the preface, he talks about his objectives for this pamphlet. And he mentions in here the fact that he wanted to publish this so that the British saints could have access to these wonderful materials that came from the prophet Joseph Smith. But he also says the following. Altogether, it is presumed that true believers in the divine mission of the prophet Joseph Smith will appreciate this little collection of precious truths as a pearl of great price that will increase their ability to maintain and to defend the holy faith by becoming possessors of it.
And how well was this pamphlet received by the members of the church?
Before long, it became a popular volume as well, because it made easily accessible to church members there the writings of Joseph Smith from an earlier time period.
The people just loved it. And as missionaries would go over there and they'd see that book, you know, they'd page through and go, wow, this is really good. And some would bring some home from their English missions and show them around. And so it started to get famous. And it did. It got very, very famous over here as well.
With new editions of the Book of Mormon and the Doctrine and Covenants being prepared in the mid-1870s, the Pearl of Great Price also figured into this publishing venture.
So in 1878, the year after the death of President Brigham Young, a new edition of the Pearl of Great Price was printed. The 1878 edition was not to be a mission pamphlet like the 1851 edition, but was published out of church headquarters in Salt Lake City, and it was prepared under the direction of Elder Orson Pratt of the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles.
The 1878 Pearl of Great Price was virtually identical to the 1851, with the exception of two significant changes.
The major change in the 1878 edition of the Pearl of Great Price compared to the 1851 edition was the repair work that was done on what we call the Book of Moses today. So for the Book of Moses material, Elder Pratt simply took the first chapters of Genesis out of the Reorganized Church's 1867 printing, which we now commonly call the Inspired Version, and he included that in the Pearl of Great Price in place of and completely replacing the Genesis material that Elder Richards had included in the 1851 edition. We got in 1878 a corrected and much stronger version of the material that we now call the Book of Moses, but the title Book of Moses didn't come until later editions. The 1878 edition also included what we now call Section 132 of the Doctrine and Covenants. That's the revelation on plural marriage and the eternity of the marriage covenant. And that was also added simultaneously to the Doctrine and Covenants as well. In the 1878 edition, on the title page, or on the table of contents, there's an entry for Articles of Our Faith. And so that is the first use of that title in a printed edition of the Pearl of Great Price.
When Elder Richards compiled his Pearl of Great Price in 1851, well, he had no idea what would eventually become of his pamphlet.
They had a solemn assembly in October of 1880, wherein President Taylor was sustained as the new prophet of the church. And at that same conference, George Q. Cannon stood up. And not only the Pearl of Great Price, but also the Book of Mormon and the DNC were all re-sustained at that point. And the Pearl of Great Price was added at that point into the canon of the church in 1880.
Now, there may be some who will question the unusual way in which the Pearl of Great Price was created and became Scripture.
All of the books of Scripture that we have are actually compilations of earlier sources. Take the Old Testament, for example. The Old Testament is a compilation of the five books of Moses, as well as the various prophets that follow, and all of these pieces are eventually pulled together and called the Old Testament. But it is a compilation, a selection made by people later of earlier writings. The Old Testament, the New Testament, the Book of Mormon, and the Doctrine and Covenants are all selections made by later editors of earlier inspired works. When you look at it that way, the Pearl of Great Price then is not accidental. It's a selection made by one of the members of the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles, who wanted to bring together in one pamphlet these earlier revelations, narrations, and translations of Joseph Smith.
James E. Talmage, a geology professor at the University of Utah, was asked by church leaders in 1900 to revise the text of the Pearl of Great Price. Then again, in 1921, Elder Talmage, now a member of the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles, revised the text again, this time into the double-column format that we're familiar with.
Now, Brother Talmage was a modest man, but he was considered by the brethren to be about the brightest guy in the church at the time, and so he was given the assignment as a church calling to revise the Pearl of Great Price in preparation for what we now call the 1902 edition. And in his diary, he mentions that he doubts that he will be known as the reviser of it. But on the title page of it, when it was printed, it says, Revised by James E. Talmage. And when it was presented to the church by President Joseph F. Smith, he made a point of praising Elder Talmage for his work on it. Elder Talmage received the responsibility to divide the books into chapters and verses for the first time. And so we have the same chapter divisions and the same verse divisions that we have in the Pearl of Great Price today. In addition to that, he took out the material that had been in the earliest editions from the Doctrine and Covenants. Those were no longer needed in the church today because the Doctrine and Covenants by 1902 was readily available to church members everywhere in multiple languages. The poem Truth was removed. The Articles of Faith got the title that we have today, the Articles of Faith of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And the Book of Moses received the title finally that we use today for the Book of Moses. In the Harold B. Lee Library at Brigham Young University in Special Collections are two copies of the Pearl of Great Price that Brother James E. Talmage used in 1902 to prepare for the 1902 edition. In one of those copies, he went through and created the chapter and verse divisions. And one can look at those copies and see where he wrote in by hand chapter breaks, verse breaks. What an exciting responsibility that would be. In the second copy, he copied those chapter and verse divisions into the second copy, and it was on that copy that he created the footnote cross-references. The major difference between the 1921 edition of the Pearl of Great Price and the 1902 edition was the inclusion of the two-column format that we're so familiar with now. In the 1902 edition, it was all in one column. But in the 1921 edition, many of the footnotes remained as Elder Talmage had created them back in 1902. But the big difference is the separation into two columns. When we look at scriptures today, we're so familiar with this two-column format. It goes back 1,000 years. It goes back into prior to the time of printing. Bible creators would write things in two columns. And so when the first Bibles were printed, very often they were in a two-column format. But for our own Latter-day Saint scriptures, it wasn't until a century or so ago that we finally have our scriptures into two columns.
When James E. Talmage went back and reformatted the book to look like scripture, it was taken again into General Conference under the direction of Joseph F. Smith, then the president of the church. And he had the saints once again vote to examine this book and receive it as scripture. So it was canonized a second time, I think largely because it was reformatted.
A half century later, in 1976, two more revelations were added to the Pearl of Great Price. As it turned out, only temporarily.
The two revelations were an 1836 revelation to the prophet Joseph Smith concerning the celestial kingdom, the vision of the celestial kingdom, and then President Joseph F. Smith's 1918 revelation concerning the redemption of the dead. Both of these had been well known in the church because they were important documents, but they had never yet been included in the standard works. So, April Conference 1976, President N. Eldon Tanner presented them to the church, a counselor in the First Presidency at the time, for a sustained vote of the Latter-day Saints, and so they were included in the Pearl of Great Price. Originally, so that people could have ready access to these documents, the church printed a little insert that could be placed inside of your copy of the Triple Combination. And so I was able to get this back in 1976, place it in the back of my Pearl of Great Price, and have it available there. In preparation for the new Triple Combination that came out in 1981, the decision was made to take those revelations, which had been added to the Pearl of Great Price in 1976, remove them from the Pearl of Great Price and add them to the Doctrine and Covenants.
So I like to think of the Pearl of Great Price as being like a gold brick, a brick of pure inspiration, revelation, and narrations and translations of Joseph Smith that Franklin D. Richards was able to extract from larger ore and bring together as one solid mass.
And that is the story of the Pearl of Great Price. and our conclusion to our Revelations to Publication series. Now, when we come back, there have been two volumes of the Joseph Smith Papers that have been printed and made available to us. Those are unique books, and they're meant to be used. Next week on the Joseph Smith Papers, the scholars will tell us how. I'm Glenn Rawson. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the Joseph Smith Papers here on the Mormon Channel, a production of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.